Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
John Keim, of course, covers the team for ESPN and ESPN.com. John joins us right now. John_Keim on Twitter. He's got a really good podcast as well. We haven't talked in a while. Just give me your overall thoughts on Washington's draft, because I've gotten them from almost everybody, but it's been a while since you and I have discussed it.
I thought it was solid. I think the first four picks, you can legitimately think that they will all play and contribute, and some contribute a lot. You know, I think Percy Butler, the safety, is in that group who's the fourth round pick. I'm curious to see how he looks throughout the spring and then training camp, because he could be their third safety, which plays a fairly decent role on this defense. I think he'd play at least 50% of the time. Dotson's going to help. I think there's a high floor with him because, you know, when you talk to people, you hear most, you know, pro ready, right? Was he taken a little bit too high? For some people, yeah, but for them, no. I think when I even talked to some people, they thought around 19 or 20. So you're talking a couple picks before where some thought he might go, some close to him too. I like Mathis. I think he's going to give them something they don't have. And he'll play a lot because he'll be a third tackle. And eventually, if they lose Payne, he's your second guy. But you need to have a strong defensive tackle rotation. I think he gives them that ability to play more over the nose, which frees up Payne to go to where he's best, which is not necessarily over the nose. I think he does that the best of this group, but I think it helps him to get off of that too. And I think that Mathis also has a knack for keeping linebackers clean, because he's a guy who will give himself up. And I think they need that. And the running back, I think, will help too. And you watch him, and I think he understands how to run. He's not dynamic. He's not explosive, but he does create, he did a good job in college of creating arm tackle situations with his ability to set defenders up and knowing when to cut. So I think it's a solid class. I don't know if you're going to have a guy who's going to come in and be this superstar. I don't think you look at it like that. But I think it's a solid group that should have some solid first-year contributors.
Is there a player you talk to a lot more people on a more regular basis than a lot of people that cover the team? Is there a player that you have a sense that they're giddy about that they got?
Oh, I think Butler would be in that group. I think because of his speed and his approach, the way he plays, I think he'd probably be in that group. I think Cole Turner, the tight end, I know for some seems to be in that group, the fifth round tight end. I think I would say let's see how he progresses, and because you know when you talk about, and listen, I think you can talk to someone about any of these picks and get a sense. Like with Mathis, I got that sense like they were really excited to get him because of what he offers. Dotson, they felt, you know, he was one of the most pro ready receivers in this group. So, but I think when you're looking at Giddy, I think it's when you get down the line a little bit, and that's where I put Butler in there, because I think, you know, just with his special teams ability, and then again, the the thinking for them right now would be that he can develop into that third safety and maybe do so right away.
You know, usually we don't know this until maybe training camp or maybe even the regular season, that there was something that when the season ended, the season before ended, they wanted to fix. Now, obviously, we know they wanted to fix the quarterback. That was priority number one. But do you think that when we get to the regular season, we're going to realize something that maybe we're not emphasizing enough right now that was also a top priority for them to fix? Do you have any answers to that? And if you don't, that's fine. But there's something that's been gnawing at me that I think we're going to learn more about when we get to the regular season. But go ahead. You give an answer first. No.
Talking about linebacker?
But go ahead on linebacker.
Well, and I think that's an area where you need to get more depth, if nothing else. And I think you still need to add some sort of veteran presence in that group. Someone that can, you know, could be a, even if it's a two down guy. So when you get into certain line, you know, certain sets where you need a run stop, more of a run stopper, that you could get a guy in there and somebody who can be almost I don't say a mentor on the field, but somebody who's got the ability to keep others in line with what they need to do. I think that's an important thing to still find for them. I think I'd like to see more depth there. I think that's another area where, you know, you have to have, you know, William Jackson was adjusting to how they wanted to use him. They used a lot more man early and the defense didn't play well. They played better when they used more zone, but that's not necessarily his strength. Kendall Fuller, solid corner. But how is Benjamin St. Juice going to come back? I thought he made some progressions early last year, but how will he come back after having, you know, multiple concussions? How is he going to progress? So I think there's some questions about cornerback as well.
On the linebacker front, do you have names, like a guess on somebody they'll add here in the next,
Not really. I think there was, you know, maybe some hope or, you know, wondering would a guy like Blake Martinez come free from the Giants? Because that's a guy that they liked a couple years ago before free agency. But I don't think that that's going to happen. But he would have been one to watch. I would have put him as a guy to watch if he had come free. But right now he's not. So he's not. But Kevin, it's more so a guy. I mean, you know, listen, I mean, I don't know if it's conceivable that John Bostic comes back, but a guy who fits that kind of description where who can be. And part of it, too, is after the season when they went back and looked at it, I think they started to realize, they looked at Cole Holcomb, I think, differently after studying the season than they did maybe toward the end of the season, as far as his progression as an inside linebacker in various defense, in various packages. So I think that kind of changed maybe a little bit about what they were looking for at that position, which is why you'd need a guy like maybe a better version of a David Mayo, right? Somebody who can, again, and they don't use three linebacker sets that often. So it's not like that's a prominent role, but you still need a guy who can go in there and give you some things at that position. But I think they absolutely need more depth there.
We're talking to John Kime, of course. I think on the linebacker front, too, the thing that Rivera has told me before is that, you know, they're looking for that extension of Del Rio on the field.
Correct.
And Bostic was that. And
yeah,
I think they're hoping Cole Holcomb can be that, but I don't think they're sure about that. Do you agree or not?
I think they'd still like to add that guy, yeah. So I think that would suggest that they're not sure that Cole – I think they like when Cole can play free. And I think you need a guy who can handle a lot of the making sure that others know exactly what they're – and trust – not just making sure what others know what they're doing, but trusting that, but also relaying it quickly. And even if you're wrong at times, the theory is if all 11 guys are on the same page, it's okay. The problem comes when five guys are doing this and four are doing that and two are doing this. That's what they can't have. So even if you make a wrong call, make it decisively, be on the same page, and you can live with the results because it probably won't be a big bust, right? So I think that's, so yes, I think they could, I think there's some, at least, I don't know, I wouldn't say concern, I think that'd be the wrong word, but you know, you still have to see how Cole handles that aspect of being that sort of an extension on the field. But that is, that's why I say, like, I, you know, that's what the Bostic types are what they'd be looking at. And there aren't a lot of, it's not like there's a lot of dominant, you know, off-ball linebackers out there.
Is Anthony Barr still out there or not?
Oh,
in terms of thinking about coach on the field, too.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
I mean, the more I listen to you, the more I realize, you know, there's only one sure thing at linebacker right now. Now, I think Jamin Davis has unbelievable athletic ability, and he's going to get a chance. But the only sure thing they have at linebacker right now is Cole Holcomb. Now, maybe they'll only have one linebacker on the field a lot, which happened last year. And certainly two linebackers on the field happened plenty. But they only have one sure thing at that position right now, and it's Holcomb.
Yeah, and Davis has to take a big step. I mean, he's the guy, you know, when I talk about this draft class, and I actually have a story coming, I think it's today or tomorrow, coming out about this, when, you know, because you ask about the draft class, and I don't know that there's this high ceiling guy in this group. I think there's a lot of solid players, and you need solid players to win. I think people always want all these massive home runs. If they get four or five solid guys out of this draft, that's good. But I think you look at the high, like Jamin Davis is a higher ceiling guy because of his size, his speed, his power, right? He can ascend to a certain level, but you've got to get there. And I thought there were times last year he made progress, and then you'd see some other times where there's hesitation, which is why if you can get that, you know, if you can get Cole to be playing with a certain level as the coach on the field, then that I think would help Davis. But yeah, I mean, he's got that ability, and it's got to be realized. I mean, he's the 19th pick in the draft. He's got to ascend this year, and he's a guy that certainly it might take him a couple years, but he's certainly capable of a big step this year. But he's got to make it.
All right, we're talking to John Keim. The player that was on my mind when I asked you about whether or not there's kind of maybe an underreported or an underthought of storyline here in the offseason that will become more obvious to us when the season begins. And I'm not saying that we haven't discussed this, because we've all discussed this much more after the draft than before. But they must have major concerns about Antonio Gibson. You know, McKissick was lost and then he wasn't. And I'm not saying that it's the identical position, clearly. And I know they wanted McKissick back. But drafting a running back in the third round is an indication that that running back is expected to participate, contribute, and play a bunch.
Yeah.
So what do you think Scott Turner in particular are the concerns? The fumbling we all know. But they are trying to either help him with somebody to share or replace him. Which is it?
Listen, it could well be both, right? I mean, I think initially it's – everything I've heard about Gibson was how much they liked how he played down the stretch, and especially like after the bye. They had a talk with him during the bye week about running a certain way, and it's, to be honest, it's the way that Robinson runs. And that's about, you know, setting up arm tackles, for example, and not trying to jump out of the hole if you see a defensive back in there. And that was something that Gibson was doing a little bit too much for them. And, you know, he's a big guy. Use that size, because as the theory goes, like, guy might get in your way one time, you truck him, he's going to find a way to maybe miss that tackle the next time, just kind of like, oh, I was almost there, right? That, you know, because it's guys don't want to get trucked. And so that's what they were trying to work with him on. And I think they felt like he got better in that area. And I felt like that Giants game, he ran really well and did a good job of setting up defenders and, you know, pressing the hole and creating better run situation for himself. And I know it was a season finale against a bad team, but it was the style or the traits that he showed in that game that I think you can build off of. But I think you'd have to say, can he handle that 20 to 25 carry a game load? And I think that's where you'd say that it doesn't seem like that's the case for them based on this pick. Because I agree with you, when you're picking a guy in the third round, he's not just coming in to get a couple carries a game. You know, this is a guy that they like because of his ability to do what I just said. I mean, he does set up, he runs very patiently and can set up. Like, there's a play in the Georgia game in the final where he's able to, the defensive end kind of busts the inside. And inside, he was supposed to run inside the tackle, it looks like. The end has the leverage. And so he sets up the end and the defensive back by making it appear he's going to press outside. And he cuts right back. He widens the lane, cuts back, creates like three or four arm tackles, and gets like 15 yards. A mature run, not an explosive run. That's not his style, but a very good run, right? So I think you're not going to, and I know that they like that style about him. So I could see it being a, if Gibson doesn't progress as they hope, then you have a guy that can take over for him and you don't have to pay him yet. If Gibson does progress, then I think you can see this guy being a guy who they can use on in some ways. Maybe it's also protection against J.D. McKissic as well, because J.D. coming off that neck injury, you do have a guy in Robinson who was a good pass protector in college and has shown pretty good hands. Now, to be a good third down back, you have to also run good routes. But he's shown the ability to catch the ball. So I think it could also be some protection about with two guys more so than just one, just because, again, you're coming off a neck injury. That's difficult. And so I think that – so I don't know that I would look at it as more so these big warning signs for Gibson as much as some protection against both, maybe.
All right. I want to ask you about two players. Is there any reason to be legitimately concerned about either Logan Thomas or Chase Young's availability for the beginning of the season?
It's, I mean, with Young, I haven't heard that. But I've also learned, Kevin, over the years, like, we'll find out in August. But, you know, I mean, right now you're always going to hear that they're on pace or ahead of schedule, typically, right?
What are you hearing about him?
With Young, I had heard that he was ahead, but I don't know. But I also, like I said, I've learned over the years that you can hear that, and then all it takes is a little setback at some point, or you see the videos of guys doing X, Y, and Z, and then you know, I just remember with Darius Geis a few years ago, you'd see all these videos of him running, everybody gets all excited, and then he doesn't play, right? So, or it took longer, because you have to see the lateral movement and all that. But that's what I'd heard initially, was that Chase Young was progressing well and ahead of schedule. And I know he expects to play in that season opener. But like I said, I mean, I always kind of take a cautious approach with those things, because you learn over the years that you don't know. And you know, with Logan, I think it's going to be trickier because of when his injury happened a month later than Chase's. So that would, you don't know. I mean, it'd be a 9-month recovery period for him to be in the season opener, right? That's to me kind of quick. So I don't know yet about that one. I don't want to say one way or another, because I think that might be asking a little bit much, but we'll see.
By the way, a week from today, the first set of OTA days for Washington, the mandatory mini camp is mid-June, and then of course training camp will start at the end of July time frame. But a week from today, the first set of OTA days. We're being joined by John Keim. At this point, is it safe to say that there's not a lot of interest in James Bradberry from Washington, or not?
Well, I think there'd be interest. I think the question has been the money.
Money.
So I think if his money was a certain point, I think there would be more interest. But I don't think that I think their priority still seems to be getting some guys done internally more so than going out and spending big on a Bradberry right now, and then maybe not having the same flexibility to, you know, it's not just Terry McLaurin. I mean, they also have, Deron Payne going into his last year, Cole Holcomb going into his last year. So there are other guys that they have to consider when you're looking down the road, and I think they're trying to maintain that flexibility. But there'd be interest if his money was lower.
All right, last one, because I saw that you guys, ESPN, ESPN.com. ESPN put out their updated power rankings for next year. And I know that you have to, kind of put in a number for Washington and then write, something about Washington's upcoming season. And in the latest power rankings for ESPN, Washington's ranked as the 22nd best team in the NFL. They're, I think, the 9th or 10th best team in the NFC. So what my question to you is this. I think, and I don't know, I'm not taking Twitter as anything other than what it really is, which is a small, small representation of sort of the overriding thought from the people following the team or even interested in the team. But there seems to be great disparity between a lot of sort of Commanders Twitter and the reality in Vegas and even these, very subjective, all too early power rankings. What do you think it's closest to? Washington ended up being 22nd in ESPN's poll. Do you vote for a position or do you just write the paragraph on Washington?
No, I don't vote. I don't write in a number. There's a different formula for how it comes out. So it's a lot of, is this team better than this team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, to me, that's a little bit low, but I understand it too, because for a couple of reasons. One, how often have, they've had five straight losing seasons. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you want to, the way you get it, and first of all, these power rankings are irrelevant. I mean, we do them.
Of course they are. Of course they are. But it gives us a chance to have the conversation about where we think they fit.
What I like about them is it provides, like you said, that perspective. How do others view what's going on here? And I do think that there's a segment of people who look at this team, it's like, they could be pretty solid.
RG3.
Yeah, exactly.
He thinks they're a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far yet because there's a lot of things that you have to see break a certain way. But when you look at them, like to me, I look at it like they won 7 games last year with a harder schedule, with Taylor Heinicke, whom they consider a high-end backup, but a backup nonetheless, starting all 16 games. And with all the COVID and injury issues they suffered down the stretch. So are they better now than they were last year? Well, I think they are for a few. I think they have better quarterback. I think the schedule is a lot lighter. Now, we also know, like, when you look at the schedule, like, what if Trevor Lawrence gets it and that first game is his coming out party? Is that possible? Yeah, he's the number one pick in the draft,
Yeah.
So,
of course.
They played the Browns.
The Lions played great at the end of last year. What if it was a springboard into this year with their new coach?
So there's some things where I say the schedule, and it's like it could look a lot different because Detroit should be better. How much better? I don't know. But so like that's a team. So it's just the winning percentage is always a little bit misleading. But I do think that the schedule on paper right now is more conducive to them. And, you don't face the heavy, heavy top 10 quarterback group that you did last year. So that should help. But I think to get there, I think the reason why my sense would be the reason why people would be skeptical is because they're kind of like one of those teams where every year it's like, hey, they could be better, and then they're not. So you've got to go do it first. Like, if they go out and win 10 games this time next year, they could be looking at maybe, hey, is Washington the top 10 team? But you got to go do it first. If you want people the outside perception to change, there's one way to change them. But that's how, like, when people do these voting things, it's a lot based on, they say this every year about this team. Or, like, Carson Wentz, I mean, you can look at him here. It's like, he's an upgrade. The outside world's going to look and say, well, two teams have traded him. So which is, so they're both true.
Both things can be true, and they are.
Yeah, I think they are true. And I think, like, as someone else said here, like, if he goes 27-7 interceptions this year, he might be getting a statue at FedEx Field. With Indy, you got him traded because, the owner looks and is like, well, he's not Peyton Manning. He's not Andrew Luck. Well, yeah, no kidding. So, but here, he's not Josh Johnson. He's not Mark Sanchez. He's not Heinicke, right? And again, I always say this. I'm going to preface it with Heinicke. I love what he's done, period. you know. But you know this, but Carson Wentz gives them the ability to do more things in this offense, and I think the addition of Dotson, but there's always these if Curtis Samuel stays healthy, if Chase Young gets back to if he gets to where you know the progression we thought he was on after his rookie year, if so. They're, that's what I think is holding them back right now a little bit. But, I definitely think they'll be better. And I think they're capable of 10 wins. I don't know about you, but I think they're capable of that.
Yeah. I just think that the what you said about Jacksonville and then, you know, just the two games. I mean, I talked a lot about this last week, but they're, you know, no one's going to know in week one or week two if Jacksonville and Detroit are much better teams than they were last year, which means the perception will be that Washington should win those two games. And, you know, I think back, I remember 2017, they had the Rams in week two, and the Rams weren't supposed to be any good that year. That was Sean McVay's first year. And Washington won the game over the Rams in week two that particular season. But the Rams went on to have a really good year, and it was the springboard. They made the playoffs. They lost to Atlanta, I think it was. Yeah. Right? I think it was the Falcons they lost to in that first round. And then anyway, you never know. But I think the pressure's on.
When they had the season opener against the Colts a few years ago in Alex Smith's first year, and the Colts defense looked really good, and you're thinking, God, the Colts weren't very good last year. And then it turned out they were a really good defense and a good team that year. So you're right. You don't know. And you don't know, like, these games late in the year, everything depends about when are you playing them. Like, so we can look at, you know, a team, you know, a few years ago, they played San Francisco later in the year. Well, Nick Mullins was starting a quarterback. They're a different team.
Yeah, so, they got, like, Ben DiNucci for the Cowboys, you know, and they didn't have to face Prescott that year.
This team last year in December was a different team than they were in November.
Yep, exactly.
You know, so you're right. You can't judge it based on that because we don't know. And, you know, Detroit could be going into the season with a lot of energy because they think, hey, we're going to be, it's year two of Campbell and we'll be better. And so you have a little bit more energy early on. And it's, you know, so you don't know.
Yep. Thanks for doing this, as always. Much appreciated. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kevin.
John Keim, everybody. John_Keim. If you're shopping for a new home, the last thing you want is another surprise in mortgage rates, and you're getting many of those surprises these days. I'm excited to tell you about Loan Pronto's all-new rate protection program. You can get a rate quote that'll be locked in for 90 days. Brian and Amy did it. They locked in an APR in the threes with Loan Pronto. When they finally found a home a month later, rates had jumped into the fours, but they were protected thanks to Loan Pronto, and they saved over $200 a month on their payment. With Loan Pronto's rate protection guarantee, you can make offers with confidence, and there's no fee, no upfront cost for this service. And most home buyers who go with Loan Pronto save about $3,000 on closing costs. Call now for the all-new rate protection program so you can check rate increases off the list of things to worry about. 571-775-1810 or loanpronto.com. That's 571-775-1810, 571-775-1810. They're an equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval, NMLSconsumeraccess.org.
Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
So remember a couple of weeks ago we told you about Warren Sharp, who put together his own strength of schedule for the upcoming season. This was before the actual schedule came out, you know, based on the teams that we've all known since the end of the season, who they'd be playing, and we just found out the dates and the order, etc. On Thursday, and he said a better way to determine schedule strength is not based on last year's records for the teams, but it's based on the projected strength of a team in the upcoming season when you're going to play that team. And so he had his own strength of schedule rankings based on the over-under totals in Vegas, basically, which to me makes a lot more sense in putting together a strength of schedule than does using last year's records. Well, he did something else on Friday that I wanted to share with everybody. And that is he looked at the actual schedule now that it's out. Because his contention, and we've talked about this, but not in the detail that he explains, which I will get to in a moment, is that it is often about when you play a team versus the team that you're playing itself. You know, there is the strength of scheduled opponent, but then there's the timing of when you play an opponent. Obviously, we all understand that if you catch a team without its starting quarterback, that's, you know, great timing. You know, that team looked, you know, daunting on the schedule before the year started, like the Packers do for Washington. But if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play in the game because he got hurt, well, you know, you caught him at the right time. But Warren Sharp went into the detail of what he called sort of the teams that were hurt and helped most by the actual schedule release on Thursday based on when you're playing these teams and how much rest you have before a game versus how much rest your opponent has for a game. And he essentially said, in order to evaluate sort of the timing of the schedule, you need to look at things like net rest edges, which I'll explain in a moment, the opponent's days to prepare for your game, more or less rest for an opponent versus your opponent, short week road games, okay, so you play on a Monday night and then on Sunday you play on the road, games off of a Sunday night or Monday night, so playing a Sunday night game or a Monday night game and then playing the following Sunday. And he also outlined 4 games in 17 days, which is the worst case scenario for any team, but it's also not something that happens very often. I want to start with what he describes and explains is net rest edges. Bear with me here because I think this is really interesting. He writes, net rest edge can be massive. Net rest is the edge in days of a rest a team has by game summed over the course of a season. For example, this year, the defending Super Bowl champion LA Rams play the opening Thursday game on September 8th versus the Bills. They don't play again until the following Sunday, which is 10 days after their prior game. In that Week 2 game, they play the Falcons, who played 7 days prior on opening Sunday. Thus, for Week 2, the Rams have a net rest edge of 3 days plus 3, and the Falcons carry a minus 3 into the game. You sum that up over the course of the season, and you get the net rest edge for the entirety of the season. Brendan, you followed that, correct?
I did, yes. Thankfully, okay. I saw it ahead of time. Otherwise, I might have gotten confused, but yes.
Okay, well, I want to just say it one more time so that everybody follows along. I don't want to lose anybody on this. The Rams play on Thursday night, September 8th. They don't play again until Sunday, September 18th, 10 days later. The Falcons, who play the Rams in Week 2, play on Sunday, September 11th, and then play on September 18th. That's 7 days in between games. So the Rams have 10 games in between the games. The Falcons have 7 days in between the games. Hence, the Rams have a plus 3 day rest advantage, and the Falcons have a minus 3 day rest advantage. And then how that plays out over the course of a season, you know, Warren Sharp describes as your overall season net rest edge. Now, last year, there were 6 teams in the NFL that ended up with plus 9 days as their overall net rest edge, net rest edge for the season. 2 of those teams were the Rams at plus 9 and the Bengals at plus 11. Both of those teams made the Super Bowl. Last year, teams with a rest edge of 3+ days went 33-23-1, 59% of the games they won. If you're interested in how often they covered, 54%. Since the year 2015, teams with a rest edge of over 3 days have won 53.8% of the games and covered, again, if you care about that, 52.7% of the time. By the way, on the coverage thing, if you just bet blindly, the teams with 3 days net rest at minus 110, you'd profit a little bit. You'd have to bet a lot to profit a lot, but you would profit. Anyway, if everybody followed that, and I hope you did, again, you know, I'll get to Washington's situation here in a moment. The net rest edge is the difference in days you have prior to your next opponent in rest versus what they have. If you both play on a Sunday and then next week play on a Sunday, there's no net rest edge. It's even. But when you play on a Thursday and then you have, you know, that mini bye and don't play until next Sunday and your opponent played on Sunday, you've got plus 3 days. Now, I'll come back to what this season has produced in terms of net rest edge in a moment, but I want to read these two paragraphs from Warren Sharp's story on this. Let's talk about a few teams of interest here. In very strange fashion, the NFL made three different teams each play four games versus opponents off of a mini bye. This happens when you play a team coming off a Thursday night game, so that team has three extra days of prep and rest. Last year, no team played four opponents off of mini buys. This year, it's happening to three teams. Those three teams are the Jets, the Jags, and the Commanders. The Commanders, Warren Sharp writes, remarkably play four games with three-day rest disadvantages. This happens when you play, again, a team coming off a Thursday night game and you've played on Sunday and then you play the next Sunday. In Week 10, Washington plays Philadelphia. Philadelphia's coming off a Week 9 Thursday night game. They get 10 days rest, Washington with 7. The same happens when Washington plays the Giants in Week 13. The Giants played on Thanksgiving the previous week against the Cowboys. Washington played on Sunday against Atlanta. The Giants will have a net 3 days rest. The 49ers in Week 16, San Francisco comes into that Christmas Eve day game against Washington off of playing the previous Thursday. 10 days rest, Washington with 7 days rest. They get a 3 day net rest advantage. And then in Week 18, Washington finishes the season with the Cowboys at home. Dallas plays on Thursday in Week 17. So not only, Warren Sharp writes, is Washington playing four teams off of mini buys with 3 days of rest advantage, they're playing them all late in the season. The Jets and the Jags have them scattered throughout the season. The Commanders, Washington, have them all bunched up at the end of the season. Washington also gets its bye late in the season as well. So again, the NFL made three teams play four games versus opponents off a mini bye. Last year, no team played four opponents. This year, three teams it's happening to. There's something else that Washington's at a disadvantage of when it comes to this year's schedule. There's something that Warren Sharp describes as short week road games. Okay? Short week road games is when you play on a, you know, Monday night and then have to play the following Sunday on a road, as an example. Washington's at a disadvantage when it comes to that this year as well. I'll explain when we come back and then give you where Washington ranks overall based on the timing of their games this year. If it's a net positive this year or it's a net negative, I guess you can already imagine it's not going to be a net positive. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
All right, Warren Sharp, I'm just taking you through this exhaustive study he did on the NFL schedule, which, you know, is based not on the teams being faced, but when teams face teams, you know, and he's got this thing called net rest advantage, where you basically count up the number of days, you know, net-wise, where you have rest, where you have a rest advantage or you have a rest disadvantage, and you come up with who ends up having the most rest versus the teams that have the least amount of rest going into games. There's something else, and I'll get back to the overall rankings here in a moment. There's something else that he discussed that Washington didn't benefit in. You know, on the, you know, I already talked about, you know, Washington's issue with playing four games with three-day rest advantages in the season. They're just one of three teams this year that will play four games on 3 days rest. They, the Jets and the Jags, in Washington's case, when I say 3 days rest, a 3 day rest disadvantage, meaning the other team played on Thursday and you're going to play them on 10 days rest where you've had just 7 days and they've had an extra three to prepare. And Washington gets all of those late in the season. They play the Eagles coming off a Thursday night game. They get the Giants, who come off a Thanksgiving Day game. They get the 49ers off a Thursday night game, and the Cowboys at the end of the year coming off a Thursday night game as well. So four teams on their schedule at the end of the year that will have 3 days more to prep for the game than Washington. And as Warren Sharp pointed out, those games, teams over the last six seasons have won 54% of those games. Now, there's something else he wrote about. He called this short week road games. Okay, these are games in which you play on, say, Sunday night and then have to play on the road on Thursday night. Or you play on Monday night football and then have to play on the road on Sunday. Okay, he writes that last year we saw 28 games where a team was playing on a short week game on the road. This week there are 43 short week road games. Okay, 15 more than there were. Last year, no teams had to play more than two of these kinds of games. Okay, again, you play on Monday night football, and then you have to play on the road on Sunday. So, or you play on Sunday football and you have to play on the road on Thursday night. That's called a short week road game, and it's a disadvantage for the teams that play them because they have less time to prep, less time to prepare because there's travel involved. This year, one team has to play four short week road games, four of them. That team is not Washington. It's Philadelphia. Philadelphia plays week three in Washington off of a Monday night game. They play week nine in Houston on the road off a Thursday night, on Thursday night off a Sunday game. They play week 11 in Indianapolis off a Monday night game, and they play week 16 in Dallas off a Saturday afternoon, on a Saturday afternoon after a Sunday game. However, there are five teams playing three short week road games. Washington's one of those teams. The Patriots, Saints, Colts, Washington, and Buffalo. Washington's three short week road games are they play Tennessee in week five at home, and then they play at Chicago on a Thursday night. They play on Monday night at Philadelphia, then have to play at Houston the following Sunday. They play the Giants on Sunday, December 18th in Week 15, and then have to play on the road at San Francisco. So Washington's at a disadvantage in a couple of ways that Warren Sharp points out here, and let me net it out for you. The overall net rest edge, okay, the number of days that you have a rest advantage and what those days are, all right, subtracting how many days you're at a disadvantage. Washington for the upcoming season
overall plays five games in which they're at a net rest disadvantage. As we pointed out, four of them 3 days net rest disadvantage. They play four teams late in the season coming off Thursday night games. They place another team coming off a one-day advantage. They also have four games where they have a net positive advantage. Overall for the season, they lose 1 day of advantage. That's kind of the middle of the pack. Buffalo has plus 12 days as a Super Bowl favorite. Detroit plus 11, Denver plus 9, Dallas plus 8 in the division. The worst team in the league this year and days lost for preparation to their opponents, the Packers at minus 12 days. Now, overall, let me net it out for you. All right, the most favorable schedule based on timing for 2022, taking all of these factors into consideration that Warren Sharp did, the Panthers have the best timed schedule in the league. Washington's is at 27th in the league out of 32 teams. Last year, Washington was at 30th in the league last year overall. Number one in the league, the Bengals. Number two, Panthers, three Lions, four Texans, five Broncos. So it doesn't necessarily equate to, you know, Super Bowl, although the Bengals had, again, the number one overall profile. Washington's profile this year, according to Warren Sharp, you know, the teams hurt most by the 2022 timing of games. Washington was 27th in the league. Only the Packers, Patriots, Saints, Eagles, and Cardinals ended up with worst, you know, worst timing of the games on their schedule. That may have been difficult for some of you to follow. Hopefully it wasn't difficult for the majority to follow. The net of the whole thing is that when you play these games and how much rest your opponent has and how much rest you have matters to the result of the game. It's not always just the opponent and whether or not the opponent's healthy or not healthy. It's whether or not that opponent played the previous Thursday and had 10 days to prepare for your game and you only had seven. Or you played on a Sunday and then had to travel for a Thursday night game. Or you played on Monday night and had to travel for the following Sunday game. Washington got screwed in these two different areas. In the overall area of net rest. But in terms of the short rest and a road game, and specifically how many games they play at the end of the year in particular against teams that played 10 days prior to playing Washington, with Washington on 7 days rest. Something to keep in mind. They didn't get the benefit here from that standpoint. They're not traveling much in terms of mileage this year, but that's in part because they only have one West Coast trip, and that is San Francisco. Their next longest trip is Dallas. All right, when we come back, the Caps are done for the 2022 season, out in the first round for the fourth straight year. What's next with Washington? Greg Wyshynski from ESPN will be our guest. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show and the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also on the Odyssey app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.